Nationally syndicated financial columnist Terry Savage joins us. Hi, Terry.
I'm here.
I know. You know what? I was just listening to Pete in my ear, and he said that Mayor Brandon Johnson is just stepping up to the microphone.
Let's hear that.
Let's just listen to his opening remarks.
You know, you have someone pretty special. I don't know if you've had a chance to witness a Bears game with Kevin Warren. There's this incredible display of the incredible food that he talks about in Chicago. And, you know, he loves this city and loves people so much that, you know, he sets out days in the week where he actually fasts and prays. And as someone who is deeply tethered to faith, I appreciate you and I honor the leadership that you have brought to the city of Chicago and to this organization. But of course, this is a beautiful day for the city of Chicago. It really is. And as a lifelong Bears fan, it is an honor to be here to celebrate the Bears' commitment to remaining the Chicago Bears.
Okay, so Mayor Brandon Johnson is getting started with, you know, listen, he said when he was on the campaign trail, you remember this, Terry, he said, look, I lived in a house with 10 people and one bathroom. I know how to negotiate. So if there's any way to get the Bears to come downtown, I will be the mayor to do it. Lori Lightfoot didn't seem to be that interested in it. She may have been one of the reasons they said, fine, we'll go to Arlington Heights. But Kevin Warren loves Chicago and everybody there, and Mayor Brandon Johnson loves the Bears and everybody. A lot of love in that room, Terry.
Yeah, but I didn't see the lakefront preservation groups in that room.
Where's the Friends of the Parks?
Yeah, the Friends of the Parks, right. So that could be, you know, full disclosure. My family season tickets were given to my grandfather by Sid Luckman. My grandfather gave them to me, and a couple of years ago I said to my son, they're yours now. I'm a longtime Bears fan. So,
well,
we want them in the city.
There you go. You're about to answer the question I'm about to ask. We'll pause here in just a minute and then do what we normally do. But do you have sort of a financial view of, would it be better for the city to invest in a stadium to keep the Bears here, or should we just cut bait and let them go?
This is such a tough one because I remember writing reports and doing stories about what the real value is when you're going to talk billions, and we have schools that are crumbling, and we have all kinds of social ills that need addressing, whether you can do that and build a stadium. But I think I might have to come down on the side of working a deal that would require private equity, which the Bears ownership has said they would do, and Jerry Reinsdorf said would do for the Sox. I think it's the perfect time to put the squeeze on the teams, but also for the city to contribute in the ways that it can easily do so, because it's important for our city. Look what's happening. Oakland lost its team. All these teams from the West Coast are converging now on Las Vegas. We're a convention city. What brings revenue to this city that supports a lot of our services is the convention business. Now, yeah, there are only 8 home games a year or something like that. But the fact of having a major league team, baseball and football, 2 baseball teams and football, is part of our reputation as well as safety and security that draws conventions to this town.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's a lot of other things that can be done with those fields as well. So I think if you take a long-term viewpoint, I hope the mayor is as good a negotiator as he says he is.
Yeah,
and he can
right.
get them to contribute.
Now, the mayor did just say, producer Pete reminded me, he just said that we are going to bring the Super Bowl to Chicago. That means a new stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and our team will be playing in it. And everybody cheers. Terry Savage is here. TerrySavage.com. Where should we start today, Terry?
Yeah, I don't know. The market is dancing around. The concern is interest rates. We've talked about that, and there is no news. So where do you want to start? Let's see what everybody else wants to talk about.
Well, the stock market is of interest to us. It does seem to at least stopped its decline a little bit. I don't know if what we're seeing right now is, if we're reading too much into it. Was this just a natural correction that was bound to happen anyway, Terry?
You never know it except in hindsight, John. What everybody's looking for is direction. We're seeing some good news on the earnings front and some bad news on the earnings front. And we're seeing stocks get oversold, like Tesla really had a terrible day. Was it 2 days ago?
Yeah.
And it has bounced back. So I don't. I have nothing important or trendsetting to say about the stock market.
Well, let me ask you
right
about
now.
This. What about the Fed? Do you think that it's possible we're going to have zero rate reductions this year?
I think that's entirely possible. I mean, everybody in the world would have bet against that 4 or 5 months ago. But, you know, when we did that January economic forecast for the Executives Club, I should pull out the notes, but the notes were like, how many rate cuts? 6, 5, 4, 5. You know, those were the forecasts because everybody was so optimistic that inflation was under control. We can't point to any one thing. I mean, there are a lot of things that we see where prices are not dropping and continue to inch up, and interest rates don't help. And take a look at mortgages. So it's entirely possible because think about this. As we move through the summer, everything becomes political inevitably. So we'll have the Republican and the Democratic conventions. It'll be hard for the Fed to make a move in the midst of all that. And immediately after that, it's all campaign and then election. And the last thing the Fed wants to be seen as is political. So if things just keep floating along at, yep, we have good growth. Yeah, we have inflation. It's down from where it was, but it's not dropping further, you could maybe not have a rate cut until maybe in December.
You know, I hear that all the time. The Fed doesn't want to be seen as political. Anything they do or don't do is political. If they don't do something, that can be political. It's sort of like, should the FBI do an investigation of a candidate in an election year? Well, yeah, you should, because that's what you do. And we all determine the politics of that. And I sort of feel the same way about the Fed. I want them to do whatever is in our mutual best interest and not worry about, does that help or hurt the president or a candidate?
I'm sure that's exactly what they want to do, but they risk that whole perception thing.
Yeah.
So they're in an election year, they're ultra careful. And if they don't have an overwhelming case for doing something, they probably will do nothing.
Well, that's maybe where we are right now. All right, 312-981-7200, your questions for Terry. You can call or text. We'll get started now, do the news, and come back with more. Hey, Terry, can a lifetime annuity take the place of long-term care insurance?
No, those don't do the same thing. There are lots and lots of annuities, different kinds of annuities. An annuity that gives you a payout over your lifetime, you give the insurance company a hunk of money now. They look at your age, your gender as well, at the current level of interest rates, and they say, okay, for your $25,000, $200,000, we will give you X dollars a month for life. And whatever that turns out to be, and by the way, you can quote that right now at immediateannuities.com. Nobody sells those to you because there's no commissions in them. So you can look online and say, I'm 63 years old and I have $200,000. But the problem is, let's just say whatever the amount you put in said, we're going to give you $1,500 a month for life. And you go, but that's really great. But at only 3% inflation, the value of your check is cut in half in 25 years. So your spending power goes away. Cut in half in 25 years at 3% inflation. So you don't want to be locked into a fixed check a month for a long, long period of time, because even a little bit of inflation will devastate it. Now, that's a story with an immediate fixed annuity. We're not talking about the ones with investments. We can get me on that rant another time. Long-term care insurance is really it's the one thing that could come out of left field, the need for long-term care. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mm-hmm. get covered by Medicare except for skilled nursing care after you've been in a hospital. But we're talking about custodial care, help getting dressing, getting in and out of bed, and so forth, feeding yourself. And that is extraordinarily expensive. So you don't want a fixed check to pay for that. I think it's about time. You know what? We're going to do this. It's about time I do an update on long-term care insurance.
Because you're an advocate. Because you're an advocate of long-term care insurance.
Yeah, it done in the correct way. And
okay.
I think it's time to update it, and I'll get Brian Gordon in, who is the guru of long-term care insurance, and we'll have a talk explaining when you need it, when you don't, when you should buy it, because there are new ways. No longer are they raising premiums on you like crazy.
Terry Savage, the syndicated financial columnist at terrysavage.com, is on the line, ready to answer your questions. Anything else you want to sneak in here, Terry?
I do. Because remember the commercial you just ran about Lake Geneva?
Yep.
Well, you know, I spend a lot of time because I have a home in that area. And I'm going to announce something, this unpaid commercial. I am going to be in Lake Geneva at the Cornerstone Shop for their big annual trunk shows. That's the fabulous store at the corner where the two main streets in Lake Geneva meet. You just can't miss it. It's my favorite store in the whole world. So I'm going to be there answering questions between 12 and 2:30 on Saturday afternoon.
You're just sitting there and people can come up and go, I got an IRA, what should I do?
Well, you're going to have to tie me to the chair because I'll typically be running around going, I think I really need that. Radio is terrible. When I was on TV every day, I had such a great excuse to shop. But I bet you that every single thing that I wear to speak or on TV pretty much now in the last couple of years has come from this wonderful store in Lake Geneva.
Called the Trunk Store?
Cornerstone.
The Corner Store. Got it.
Cornerstone. Yeah.
Cornerstone. Cornerstone.
Right.
This Saturday.
This Saturday, 12 to 2. So if you're in the area, and I promise, but I can't give good financial advice in this store because I can't take my own good financial advice because I always want everything. So I lose discipline. I walk through that door saying, now I'm really going to be serious about this, and I lose all my self-discipline. Just want to let you know I'm human.
It'll be a do as she says day. Okay, let's go
exactly.
To Dan, you're on WGN. Dan, how can we help you? You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi, John. Hi, Terry. Really enjoy your commentary and your advice. You're a great asset to the show and many listeners.
Oh, good. Tell my boss.
I'm going to be 65 soon, and right now I'm working and covered by my employer's health plan. Should I apply for Medicare when I turn 65?
Well, a couple of things about that. First of all, you should ask your employer if you're required to, because smaller employers, fewer than 20 employees, will have their health plans require you to sign up for Medicare Part A, at least. But are you contributing to a health savings account, Dan?
No.
Okay, once you start signing up for Medicare, you can no longer contribute to a health savings account. You can sign up for Medicare Part A, that's free. Ask how that works with your health plan. Talk to your HR department. You do not have to sign up for Part B because it presumably gives you the same coverage. So you don't need to pay those premiums or Part D for drugs, assuming drugs are covered under your company plan until you retire or lose your job or whatever.
But when you sign up for Part A, it's going to say, warning, if you don't sign up for Part B, you may be screwed for life.
It says that right on the form.
It scares the heck out of you.
I know we talked about that once, but the fact is, if you have comparable coverage through your employer, which is why you check with your employer, then you don't get penalized for waiting for Part B and D.
And therefore, you should not sign up for Part B.
No, don't pay those premiums until you have
under
to.
Under his circumstances, where he already
right,
has
but
coverage.
Do check with your employer to make sure their in plan does not require Medicare Part A.
But is there a penalty for him, Terry, if in fact realizing that he has coverage from his employer, he doesn't sign up for Medicare, even Part A at 65? Is that a problem?
Some employer plans require that you sign up for Part A as a primary payer, that's the hospitalization part, when you become eligible at 65.
There's no harm in it.
Do check.
There's no.
And it doesn't cost you anything. But it would make it impossible for you to contribute to a health savings account. So nothing is so simple, John.
That's okay.
I mean, these are brain twisters.
Does this help you, though?
A quick question, though. Once I decide to fully retire, at what point should I apply for Medicare? A couple months in advance? Or immediately.
Yes. Yeah, 2 months in advance. If you know when you're going to be no longer covered, you don't want to have a gap there. And even though it's not an open enrollment period, so if you decide to retire in April, losing your coverage at work is a qualifying event that lets you, either because you retired or lost your job, that lets you sign up for Medicare without penalty.
And would you recommend sign up for Part D for 60 days? 60 days? Something
60
like?
Days before.
Okay. Would you know, and this is the last question, if I decide to fully retire, would I still be covered by COBRA for 18 months, or is COBRA not applicable?
But COBRA's expensive. And again, that could be a reason for being penalized for Medicare if you don't sign up and you're eligible for Medicare. Okay, but you wouldn't want COBRA because it's going to be more expensive than Medicare is.
Okay. Yeah, these are good tips. I will check with my employer to see whether I will be covered, or I mean whether they require me to apply for Medicare. But
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, those are really good questions, Dan. I think we sometimes assume people are already on the other side of that line. A lot of you approaching that need to hear that. Okay, more questions for Terry Savage, 312-981-7200. Susan, you're next. What's your question for Terry?
Yes, I have an annuity.
Yeah.
And when I retired, they told me, they explained the whole thing to me. You could either take a guaranteed 10, 15, or 20 years, which you collected that. If you died, then let's say you took 20 years and you died in 15 years, your beneficiaries get the next 5 years, and then the money that's left in there is just gone to the wind to them. So then I figured it out. If I did something like that, almost half of my money would never be collected by a family member. So what I did, I did not take my annuity. I just left it there. I take the minimum amount that's required by the government. That way your beneficiaries will get whatever's left in there.
You have a question? What's your question? Susan, what's your question? What's your question,
Susan?
My question
is that true?
Okay. Let's let Terry respond.
Many employers give you all kinds of alternatives. You can roll it over your retirement plan. They will offer annuities that guarantee you a number of years, and you're certain, and beneficiaries can get that. And if you opt just to leave the money with the company, you probably have to do some thinking about how you're investing the money and taking required minimum distributions, whatever makes you feel most comfortable. It's not that you're leaving the money there, because they figure out what the odds. Yeah, the insurance company always has a little bit of an edge, but you get the certainty that you won't run out of money for that 10, 15, or 20 years. That there's a price to be paid for that. If you're just taking a little bit out at a time, but you're invested, for instance, in a stock market fund and it goes down, you might, because you made bad investment decisions, run out of money sooner than 20 years. So it's up to you. And I'm not going to judge you for deciding to do that.
Good question. Good answer. It's 12:45. Terry Savage on the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news now with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Southwest Airlines will operate fewer flights at O'Hare because of delivery issues with new planes from Boeing. The airline says it'll operate 37% fewer flights at O'Hare in June compared to a year ago. Its schedule at Midway will be mostly unchanged, but will be down 1%. Southwest will have 18 flights a day at O'Hare, down from 30, and the O'Hare to Tampa service is being dropped. Production issues at Boeing have delayed certification of new versions of the 737 MAX. Southwest's fleet is made up of 737s. One day after shutting down stores, Foxtrot and Dom's Kitchen and Market are being sued. A former employee alleges the store owners violated workers' rights by not giving staff members 60 days' notice of a mass layoff or plant closure. Companies are required to provide that notice under the Illinois Worker Adjustment Retraining Notification Act, otherwise known as the Warn Law. The plaintiff is a worker who claims he was terminated in the middle of a shift without warning. The company closed stores in multiple states and 1,000 workers were let go. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of Food Time, then. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you, and happy Wednesday. And let's talk about food prices. And here's a pleasant change after months and months of prices going up at the grocery store.
Grocery prices were actually flat in March.
Yeah, no change overall, says Megan Schweitzer, an economist at the USDA. Her boss, Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack, put it this way during a recent Chicago interview with Bloomberg.
Well, first of all, is to understand in terms of food inflation, there's a significant difference between what people are paying at the grocery store concerning in relationship to what they're paying at restaurants. I think what you'll find is if you go deeper into those numbers that the opportunities at grocery stores are improving significantly, but it is at restaurants where we're seeing still a bit of high inflation. So you have to distinguish between that.
Now, if you're thinking, wait a minute, I know I paid more for beef last month, how can they be saying grocery prices didn't go up? Well, Megan Schweitzer will tell us after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox? Okay, the key word in what economist Megan Schweitzer is telling us about food prices last month is overall.
Overall, while food prices are still increasing, particularly on the restaurant side, food is not one of the major contributors to inflation on an economy-wide scale in March.
Some prices went down, some stayed the same, and some went up.
For the most part, we saw prices increase for categories across the meats, poultry, and fish categories. Prices declined for dairy products, for fats and oils, sugar and sweets, cereals and bakery products, and for fresh fruits and fresh vegetables.
Leaving overall grocery prices in March unchanged from the month before and up only 1.2% from a year ago. And some foods are selling for less than they did a year ago, notably eggs, dairy, fish, and seafood. Gainers include beef, which spiked 7.5% higher than March of a year ago. On the food calendar, today's National Stop Food Waste Day, and it's National Pigs in a Blanket Day. Yeah, another way to eat a hot dog. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Terry Savage, ready for more calls, Terry?
Absolutely. But you know something? Let's just say something about what's going on in business in Chicago. We have two big business stories now. This is our business lunch and today's personal finance day. But this Foxtrot Dom's closing is a really, really interesting headline story. From what I see, they have not declared bankruptcy yet. I know we reported on the news. I was listening. That violates the WARN Act for them not to give a 60-day advance notice. Or they could be continuing to pay their employees, so we don't know yet. But that's an important headline story. The other important headline story is Oberweis Dairies declaring bankruptcy and now having two suitors, not one, trying to take over the company. So we should have a lot of good business headlines coming up.
I was, when I first heard the Oberweis story, I was really surprised. That's just been such a mainstay. And Mr. Oberweis has been a mainstay in the business and political community in Chicago. And I bought a $9 milkshake from him, and it was really good. And
all their stuff was very good. This is the
also
next
very
generation
expensive.
After Jim that expanded into a lot of different things. It's hard to keep a family business going into the third or fourth generation. I think it was fourth in this case.
Foxtrot and Dom's were darlings of the quick grocery scene.
And just merged and had all these plans to expand, so you can be sure that's going to be, forget the employee lawsuits, I'm sure they'll have to, I hope, if they go bankrupt, then it means the employees, the obligation to fund them for 60 days under the Illinois Act would become, I would imagine, one of the creditors to a bankruptcy estate. So this is going to have a lot of news headlines in this, I think.
1,000 people at those stores. More of your phone calls, 312-981-7200. Stan, you're on with Terry Savage. How can we help you?
Oh, well, John, you're not so bad for an Ottawa guy after all.
Thank you.
Terry, I listen
Thank
to
you.
Every chance I get.
Thank you.
Hey, Terry, I've had a couple tax guys tell me I own a small little business. And being 59, they tell me, you know, I can, you know, just start paying myself 1099 and don't pay back into the Social Security anymore. Seeing I'm as paid in as I can get, it won't make any more, make me any more money later on by continual paying in to them. True or false?
I think that's a little too clever by far. If you're dividending out money, yeah, I'm not going to give you tax advice, but I think that's a little bit too clever. First of all, I'm not going to walk into that quagmire.
Aren't you supposed to pay into Social Security?
Well, so if you take a salary from your business, you not only pay your half of Social Security,
sure,
but the employer's half if you have a small business.
Right.
So it's really the whole 14-point-something percent that you'd be paying. So it's tempting to say that you are an independent contractor, but as an independent contractor, you'd face the same obligation to pay both sides of Social Security. So the only alternative from a tax perspective that I can think of that I can remember would be to dividend out something to yourself, but I just don't think I want to play games with that.
Okay, we're going to leave it at that. Thank you for the nice words, Stan, and we'll go maybe time for one more call. Pete, why don't you go ahead and punch that up? That's going to be Carol on line two. Carol, what can we do for you?
I have to take my required minimum distribution every year, and I was wondering, since I'm paying taxes on that, could I put that money then that I pulled out into a Roth account?
No, You have to have earned income, and dividends, interest, distributions from IRAs do not count as earned income. If you have a job, you can put up to, you'll be able to put up to $8,000 at this stage in life into a Roth IRA, and you can keep it growing and not be required to take distributions, but only if you have earned income.
Okay, so that RMD is not considered earned income.
No, no. You get to spend it or save it. Those are your choices, but you have to pay taxes on it since it came out of a traditional IRA.
Well, I already would pay taxes on it when I take it out.
Right.
But then what's left, I thought, I got to pay taxes again on that because it's going into a savings. And
well, yeah, it'll pay. Okay, go look at Treasury bills. Go to terrysavage.com. Treasury bills, 6-month T-bills, still paying over almost 5.4%. So that would be a good place to put it. No state income taxes anyway on Treasury bills. And this is the rewards of having been a good saver. You now take the money out and you get to enjoy it.
Good luck to you on that, and thank you for the call. Carol, by the way, quick answer to this, Terry. I'm going to be 60 this year, Terry, and I have zero retirement savings. Do you think there will be any Social Security left when I retire in 10 years?
Yes, I think there will be Social Security left. I'm sure that they will come up with a workaround that will increase taxes or the level of income on which people pay Social Security taxes. But that doesn't mean you should just give up. If you have earned income, you might as well take the tax deduction and go to Fidelity or Vanguard. You don't have to be an investment genius. Put half in a money market, half in the S&P 500 fund. Get the deduction. You're 60 years old. You can put a hunk of money in there every year. Start saving now, because at 60, you're probably going to live another 30 years, and you ought to be able to double your money easily if you start now. So don't give up just because you're late.
Terry, thanks for the help. Let's talk like this next Wednesday.
I will be sitting next to you next Wednesday. And you give me one of those crazy double questions.
It's nice to hear you. Thank you, Terry.
Thanks, John.
And I will see her in studio next week.